Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, August 29th. I'm Jason Powell, and coming up after the break for non-members, the 2-for-20 discussion regarding the WWE Raw show, including the John Cena and Roman Reigns confrontation. Okay, everybody, on the site today, my WWE Raw hit list, plus we have some injury updates, news regarding Samoa Joe being sidelined. Also, coming out of the SmackDown live event last night, a correspondent noted that Xavier Woods was helped to the back. No official confirmation on those, but you can read the details on that at ProWrestling.net. Let's bring Jake Barnett into the show. Actually, before I introduce her, start talking with Jake, just a reminder, I'm on the Ross Report podcast that drops tonight at podcast1.com. 7 or 8 Central, 9 Eastern is when the show drops. I'm on with Jim Ross discussing a wide variety of topics, including the Mae Young Classic. I had a question or two for him about that, and a really good discussion. I always enjoy appearing on the show, so be sure to check that out at podcast1.com when it drops on Tuesday evening. All right, now let's bring Jake in. And Jake, WWE Raw last night, I think the big story was obviously the verbal battle, if you want to call it that, between John Cena and Roman Reigns. And for starters, I think I haven't really seen too many questions about this. I think people seem to know what it was, which is a work shoot, scripted promo. This wasn't, I mean, all these years later, people will still ask about how much of the pipe bomb promo was real and all of that. I don't sense that there's any real confusion regarding this one.
I mean, I would hope not. There was that one moment there, you know, where Reigns kind of stumbled over his words, and then Cena, you know, seemed like he went a little bit off script to skewer him a little bit, but it was pretty clear that Reigns was trying to remember lines, and then Cena is just a much better promo than Reigns, and so he's able to hide, you know, that as well as anybody in WWE. But there was no doubt in my mind watching it that this was exactly what they wanted to happen.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because Cena is so good at this. When he was doing the sparring with Rock, I looked at it as like, well, you know, I'm not surprised that Cena is really, you know, when he finally started kind of interrupting Rock and that sort of thing, I wasn't surprised that people kind of thought, man, Cena's really good at this, he's winning this battle, because Rock's promo style, it calls for the other guy to kind of stand there and take it, and where Cena is really quick on his feet. And I'm not saying Dwayne Johnson isn't, but just John Cena is really a master when it comes to that. And so watching this exchange, I did come away feeling like, well, a lot of what Roman said was easily defendable by Cena, and he did when it came to the U.S. Championship and holding wrestlers back. So even though this was scripted, I'm looking at this as, I guess, if you're thinking who won, that sort of a thing, I think it's Cena hands down. How about you?
Clearly. I mean, I couldn't imagine anybody who would have came away from that thinking that Reigns looked good throughout that process. I was surprised with how little they gave him to say that was original. I mean, it felt like they had recycled the greatest hits from, you know, Dean Ambrose's promo heading into No Mercy last year, and the feud with AJ Styles, and you know, the feud with Kevin Owens. You know, it seems like everybody they send up against Cena has the same complaints about him, you know, and his character and his part-time status and him burying people over the years. And these are things that Cena has defended well against in the past, and they've written, you know, stuff for him in the past to defend against this. I question whether they really intended Roman to, you know, to come out of this looking well, or if they were just hoping that maybe he would find a way to rise to the occasion or go off script himself and find a way to get a couple of digs in at Cena, because it sure looks like Cena wasn't afraid to do that when Roman slipped up.
Cena's so good at that. Is there any area where Roman had an ooh moment where he hit hard on Cena, you know, in a scripted nature that you think maybe scored some points with the viewers?
I can't recall a line that really hit home. It was, you know, mostly talking about, you know, his family, you know, and his legacy, and how he didn't need to beat John Cena because, you know, he didn't want to cheapen himself by the association because he, you know, and then he went on to, you know, list all of the laundry list of things that, that people have beaten to death when it comes to John Cena regarding, you know, him having, you know, the shovel and the stroke to hold guys back. And, you know, it all felt very cliche at this point. And I was a bit surprised given how much material they gave John Cena to just tear, you know, basically to Roman to shreds out there. I really felt like he was twisting in the wind at times because there really wasn't a defense for what John Cena was saying because there was just so much truth to it in terms of what the fan perception is of Roman Reigns and how he came to, you know, to having this amount of success and however you want to play it about him being the golden child. But it's a difficult thing for him to come back from. I can only imagine that they were really hoping that he would, you know, he would show something in response that would, you know, some fire or, you know, some willingness to get personal that perhaps just didn't quite happen. I mean, there you could tell that Roman was frustrated that he didn't have anything better to say, and I think it might have contributed to the fact that he was, you know, he flubbed that line in the middle that kind of gave Cena that opening.
Yeah, he just seemed to lose his place because I think it was, and second of all, and then there was nothing, and Cena ate him alive. I mean, but what's Cena going to do at that point? I don't blame him for calling him on it. You have to. You're not going to feed the guy his line. But I guess the one spot I remember the crowd really reacting to Roman is when he said that John Cena is not as big of a deal as he thinks he is. I thought that was a nice hit for him.
I guess the reason it fell kind of flat for me was because I don't think he backed it up with any real information. Like, and the same goes for when he was talking about all the people that Cena has held back over the years. It's like, well, at that point, I think you have to name names, right? I mean, like there was just a lack of evidence presented by Roman. It really did feel like they were just giving us, you know, a greatest hits list of previous promo points that were scored against John Cena, and they never really provided us with enough, you know, evidence to give it teeth. You know, if that sentence that you just described where he talked about Cena not being as big of a deal as he thinks he is, like, well, tell me why. Because if you, right, just saying that doesn't really prove your point. And I think that was where Cena had such an advantage from a content perspective in his promo, because not only was he making points, but he was backing it up with information that I think people had just kind of generally accepted as being the truth. And from that perspective, I think Roman was really left out there to dry, because the way he was written in that promo, it was clear, you know, that he was not sort of scripted to be the victor here. And maybe they'll have a change of heart on that in the coming weeks and he'll have some more interesting writing. But from a promo standpoint, you know, Cena was just, not only was he a more dynamic personality out there, but he had better lines, period.
What do you go after Cena for right now? I mean, the part-time thing, I think for the first time, basically alluded to the fact that he is part-time, but in doing so, he said that he's better than Reigns full-time. Normally, he makes it seem like he's not a part-timer. That, I think, is one area where they could have kind of had a little exchange where Cena kind of denied it at first, and Roman could bring up the fact that Cena was hypocritical, and Cena's acknowledged that, you know, he wasn't being hypocritical. I don't see it that way. I think it's just he's had a change of heart. When he was calling out Rock, it was a different time in his life, and now he's older and has all these opportunities, and so you can't blame the guy. But, I mean, is there anything? Because, as you've said, they've kind of needled him over the same points. I mean, is there anything new that people can point to?
Well, I think, you know, if you're going to look back at what actually had some traction in the past, there was a promo on SmackDown from Dean Ambrose heading into No Mercy last year where he talked about John Cena on the screen being very different than the John Cena that the wrestlers know backstage.
Sure.
And I think that they should lean very hard into that. Like, that John Cena is a fraud, that he's never been the guy that he says he is, even though, you know, there's plenty of evidence that you can point to that shows that he's a very charitable guy and he does a hell of a lot of stuff, you know, for good out there in the real world. But, you know, there may be a different John Cena that nobody's ever seen before, different from his character, different from his cultivated charitable public persona, you know, a guy that was a shark at some point. And they should probably give some examples of that, even if they aren't entirely truthful. Because Dean Ambrose had a great line about, you know, telling John Cena, you know, good luck continuing to play the, you know, the character of John Cena on TV, or the guy that, you know, good luck playing John Cena on TV. And I think there was that, there's a disconnect there that I think that they could play with that may give Roman a little bit more teeth to what he's trying to say. Because, you know, at this point, you know, for, you know, the way that promo came across, it's, you know, Cena was bulletproof and Roman had no means to defend himself. But I think they need to turn the tables on that a little bit.
How much of this, you know, with Cena going at Roman, how much is it a case of it really hit home because no one else has been able to say the things that so many Reigns haters have been saying for a while, or was it just Cena's that good?
Probably a combination of both, I would think. I mean, there's a lot of people who have been waiting for WWE to at least acknowledge that Reigns has some shortcomings, and that, you know, fans have not been entirely wrong about them. You know, it seems like they've been on radio silence about some of the things that fans aren't necessarily buying into Reigns for, and I think Cena gave that a voice, and a voice that gives it a lot of credibility instantaneously. And so I think it is a great catalyst for a feud, you know, except, you know, maybe they could have given Reigns a little bit more firepower, you know, in the other direction. It's certainly not a feud for, you know, for casual fans, but this is stuff that core fans just eat up.
It helps the match, no doubt about it. We're talking about it today a lot. You know, there was a lot of buzz last night during that promo on social media. People are excited about this. Does it help the wrestlers? Is this damaging to John Cena and Roman Reigns? Like, yeah, it generates a lot of interest in their match, but now you're pointing out all the flaws with these guys, or at least especially in the case of Roman, who they've worked so hard to protect.
I think it definitely did rain some damage. I mean, there may be people who don't follow WWE as closely as, you know. I guess we always call them casual viewers, who may now be seeing all of the cracks in this guy's armor. You know, like in the past, if you were just paying attention on a very loose basis, you might not have noticed or even cared to notice some of the things about Roman that sort of irritate core fans. And so they've put a magnifying glass on it, and I guess it's up to Roman now to, you know, to sort of overcome those odds and that adversity. You know, he's going to have to improve on the microphone. He's going to have to be, you know, the guy that can go out and deliver promos on a weekly basis. You know, Cena really torched him on his ability to sell matches and cut promos. And so I don't know how you instantaneously make the guy better at that, but I think of all the things that really hit home, that one seemed to hit hardest, especially when it caused him to lose his train of thought during the middle of that entire segment.
Right. And the other part of this, now we've talked about the positive in terms of obviously, the week before, John Cena was playing into the beach ball craze, and it just didn't go anywhere. I couldn't believe how disappointing the initial angle between John Cena and Roman Reigns was. But this week, they get it on track. They have people talking about this. It went from feeling like kind of an afterthought potential match to, all right, now it feels like it should. It feels, you know, they're billing it as WrestleMania worthy. I know we've talked before, and I know certainly that match was, I know it was on my list, maybe yours as well, for WrestleMania. Maybe sit on that match until Mania, but they're doing it at No Mercy. People are excited about it now. But what about the negatives of this style of promo? I've said it was effective. It worked. I enjoyed it. But I don't want to see this on a regular basis, basically. It's something that I think can work if you don't do it often enough. If you kind of save this for a special moment, which they did, I think it can be very effective. But I know you were on Twitter last night, at Barnett Jake, kind of listing some of the negatives and how this affects the company. So why don't you talk about that?
I think my biggest takeaway in terms of criticism for this is that, you know, Cena went way out of his way to acknowledge them breaking the fourth wall during the promo. And I think, you know, it's kind of a silly admission in some ways, because wrestling in general breaks the fourth wall all the time because there's a lot of fan participation. You know, technically, if you were having that wall up, the characters on the show wouldn't even acknowledge the fans. And so I don't think it holds water in the sense that he thought it did. I think what they're really talking about is, well, we're poking holes in the curtain that go backstage. And,
yeah.
and now we're bringing some of the politics and some of the rumor and some of the innuendo that sometimes appears online, you know, to our storylines, and we're trying to make that an issue, you know, in fiction. And to me, I think you risk leaving behind a lot of fans who don't ordinarily follow, you know, the online rumor and speculation, especially younger fans, you know, parents, you know, who don't have the, you know, any reason to care about any of that stuff. And I would include my own wife and daughter in that mix, who don't particularly follow the product as nearly as closely as I do. They don't commentate on it. They don't read Twitter feeds. They don't follow. Yeah, they're just casual viewers. And I think they, at the end of the day, you know, they watched that segment with me last night, and you know, my wife especially looked at me and was like, what was that? Why was that something, you know, is that setting up a match? How did I, you know, why am I supposed to care about any of that conflict? And I think that may be true for quite a few people. And I think the people who are most likely to flip the channel to Monday Night Football or whatever other weekly television shows start in the fall are going to be alienated by that kind of angle more than they're drawn in. And so there's this sort of balancing act that WWE has to do between, well, do we provide fan service to our core fans, or do we stick to our guns and try to make entertaining wrestling programming that sort of exists inside of this WWE universe that they've created. And I think, you know, there's going to be a conflict in trying to serve those two audiences simultaneously. But I think they should probably stick to more of their fictional programming, because when you do this on a regular basis, then it sort of just becomes kind of an in-universe thing, and it loses what makes it special. I think you can do this every once in a while, and I think people have defended it in a reasonable way online by saying that, you know, when they do this once every couple of months or once every couple of years, it becomes kind of this special event when somebody sort of peeks behind the curtain. But I don't know if it does anybody else on the card who, you know, is still sort of living in this fictional universe any justice, because you have to have a segment now where people are acknowledging real world events and then they move on. Like Gallows and Anderson came out right after this promo and had to, you know, do their hee-haw bit where they, you know, were talking about John Cena and Roman Reigns' egos getting in the way, and it seems so incongruent with the rest of the segment that it just made me laugh at them.
Yeah, it's tough because you're basically saying, okay, this is real, listen to what these guys are saying. But then does that mean the rest of the show, it's not the same universe, really? I mean, it's just, I mean, we all know what it is. It's scripted and all of that. But you're essentially telling the fans that what you're seeing with Cena and Reigns is real. Everyone else is just abiding by the script.
And I think it does put people who aren't able to enter that exclusive club at a bit of a disadvantage, you know, because they're seen as not being special enough to go off script. And if they wanted to create an environment where it felt like the show didn't have a script, that's one thing. But to have people playing by two sets of rules, it kind of creates a haves and have-not situation, especially for talent that's struggling to get over. You know, I'm sure a lot of them have a lot of very interesting things they'd like to say, but they're never going to get the chance to do it.
What is your guess? Who does LA cheer for? I mean, it's never been a Reigns-friendly town. I can't remember if they've warmed up to Cena, as some audiences have. But, I mean, right now, it would seem like, okay, advantage Cena based on the promo. But by the time all is said and done with the build, how do you expect the fans to react? I know WWE just seems to be taking the approach of, well, let them cheer who they want to cheer. So who do you think gets the majority of the cheers? Or the fans just kind of sit there and watch the match and not really pick sides because they're polarizing figures.
There's definitely that risk where it could be a lot quieter than WWE is expecting. I think there's also, you know, in my mind, like, well, there's an easy chain of events to follow. They declare John Cena a free agent, you know, when he comes back early in July. And, you know, he has a couple of feuds on SmackDown, and then he moves over to Raw, and now it seems pretty clear that they're setting him up to, you know, put some people over on the way to WrestleMania, or at least that's what it looks like to me. And so, you know, Reigns being his first feud, you know, seems to indicate that all plans are going forward for Lesnar and Reigns at WrestleMania. So I think you may, you know, once fans figure that out and that, you know, this is clearly a vehicle to kind of put Roman Reigns over, because I don't think this ends any other way than Roman Reigns earning John Cena's respect and having him, you know, have another promo after the fact putting the guy over. I think you're going to see some further resistance. I don't think the end result is going to be any different than what Reigns has been experiencing for the past 2 or 3 years. They can continue different approaches to try and make this guy something that he's not, but I hesitate to believe that John Cena is going to be the guy to make it work, but I await to be proven wrong.
Do you read anything into Cena bringing up Undertaker? Kind of, I mean, he didn't say anything that doesn't feel true within their storyline world about the hip and him being, I don't remember the exact wording, but essentially implying that he's washed up. I know it's created some online buzz to the point that my former coworker, Ryan Cardinal, who now works for the Minnesota Vikings, he reached out and wondered if perhaps that's how they get out of giving a clean finish to this match, if they need to, is incorporate Undertaker somehow. I mean, you know, who knows if he's officially retired? They keep bringing him up more and more recently, it seems like. Could that be in play?
I mean, I can't say for certain that it's not. I don't know why you...
I mean, we know for years it was believed that his last match was going to be with John Cena, and if Reigns is facing Lesnar, I mean, there's a number of people that Cena could work with, obviously, but Could it be, you know, Taker really is going to have a last ride, and it wasn't last year.
I don't know why, you know, obviously it'll do big box office. I mean, every Taker match does, and I think there's something special about a Cena match, but I mean, just given the way he went out last year, unless there was some miracle hip surgery he went under that took away a lot of the pain that he was in and restored a lot of his mobility, I don't see what another match would accomplish. Now, you know, having him come back and interfere in the No Mercy match because, you know, somebody brought up his name in a disparaging way, maybe, I guess, but I think it was more for shock value and to take a shot across the bow of diminishing Roman Reigns' accomplishments than it was trying to invoke the Undertaker for some kind of appearance.
A couple of more quick-hitting topics to close today. Your thoughts on Jeff Hardy winning the Battle Royal, becoming, at least getting a title shot next week against The Miz for the IC strap. Is this, are we looking at this being a build to the Hardys potentially feuding with Miz to Raj, or do you sense that, well, maybe they're going to go with Jeff as a singles act?
I got to believe it has something to do with the Hardys feuding with The Miz to Raj. I don't, you know, think we're going to see the Hardys go into the singles world until they've had their feud with the Revival. And I think this is, you know, just biding their time until the Revival is back and they can finish that up. So I want to believe that Jeff may, you know, do some singles work. I guess it's hard to rule it out completely, but I don't think they're done being a tag team until they've had their feud with the Revival and they undergo some character changes.
And then the other topic of conversation coming out of the show, I would say the major one, next to the title change or the Cena segment, is the title change with Alexa Bliss defeating Sasha Banks, Nia Jax getting involved afterward, and actually striking both women. My guess is they're setting up a triple threat. But what are they doing with Sasha? I mean, the more they kept bringing up the fact that she never successfully defends the title, the more I was convinced, okay, this is the time she's going to retain. I assumed she was going to retain when they announced the match, and that just really solidified it. And then they had Alexa win. What does this do for Sasha Banks?
Nothing. I wish they would make up their mind on what they want to do with the women's division. Raw has its issues, certainly, and SmackDown is even worse. You know, it just really doesn't feel like they have a great feel for what is, you know, working and what is going to make these divisions really click. And you saw the same thing with Emma earlier in the show. Like, it just doesn't feel like they know what works for a women's division at this point. I'm kind of baffled by the whole thing. I mean, I think Sasha's going to end up, you know, and then I think I said this on Twitter last night, she'll have 20 title reigns and it'll be a combined reign of, like, you know, 8 months by the time her career's over with at this pace. It's pretty crazy.
It is. I just don't understand what they're going for with that.
Never defends it successfully, and, you know, she wins it. She wins pay-per-view matches and then loses pretty much every single one of her titles on a Raw. You know,
and before, wasn't it the opposite? Because they wanted to protect Charlotte's pay-per-view streak that they just gave away for no reason.
Basically, yeah, it's weird. I don't know what's going on with the women's division at this point. I like the fact that they're trying to, you know, make Nia Jax interesting as a character, but the rest of it is just kind of like they seem to have lost focus on Alexa Bliss for a while, and they weren't, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of confidence emanating from her or her character or the booking, you know, for while she was sort of awaiting a challenger to emerge after Bayley got injured, and then they did the title change to Sasha, and now they're right back to where they started. It's almost like none of that actually happened. Like, it's a very strange booking phenomenon that they go through. You know, they've done that repeatedly, just recently with New Day having a 1 month title reign on SmackDown with the tag team championships. It's like they just can't make up their mind about what they want to do and who they want to hold championships and where they place the prestige. It's just scrambling to get television made, and then this is the result we get.
You can join Jake for live coverage of SmackDown tonight at ProWrestling.net as the show airs 7 Central. They don't really have any official matches announced. We know that Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin are going to make their debut as a tag team. They're going to do whatever they teased last week with Dolph Ziggler. And they're also going to have a Bobby Roode match, but they just haven't announced his opponent yet. But it should be an interesting show. And as always, Jake will handle the live coverage, and my hit list will be available on Wednesday, along with an audio review for the members. If there was any sound quality issues, we had to take a different approach just due to a faulty headset. So this is, if it sounds great, cool, if you didn't notice anything. If not, that explains it. Please check out the Mae Young Classic reviews that I did on the site. In fact, I did one in audio form covering the entire first 4 episodes with no spoilers going forward. You can find that as Monday's All Access Daily Podcast at pwaudio.net. And don't forget the Ross Report coming up at 7 Central. It'll be available, 8 Central, 9 Eastern. It'll be available at podcastone.com with JR and I. Answering a lot of questions that his listeners submitted and talking about a wide variety of topics. Jake, thank you very much for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
And everybody else, thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you again very soon. Take care.